This episode of Humboldt Holding Up is brought to you by Los Bagels. You know, here at Loco, we love the month of March because it's Los Bagels' birthday month, which means they have awesome deals on food and drinks all month long. This year, Los Bagels is thanking the community for 37 years of support by offering baker's dozens for just $6, small coffees for $1, and daily food specials for $3.70. So visit Los Bagels for their special March deals at 403 2nd Street in Eureka and 1061 I Street in Arcata.
It is Humboldt Holding Up, the Lost Coast Outpost's audio Rolodex of movers, shakers, people that you want to know and hear from in Humboldt County. My name is Andrew Goff.
And I'm Stephanie McGarry. And something exciting happened, not to me. Nothing exciting happened to me in a year. Something exciting happened to you this last week.
You are trying to segue into me talking about getting a vaccine. I got my Johnson & Johnson.
Yeah.
And yeah, it feels like the world is lighter. And the days are longer, and I have a vaccine, and you can see the light at the end of the tunnel of this weirdest of dumb years and a long dark winter. This is going to be a great summer, Steph.
I'm excited. I think it's going to be the best summer ever
of our lives.
I can't wait to cross over onto your side and go from a not vaccinated person to a vaccinated person. But I'm always happy when people around me get it. So obviously you're one of the few people that I actually see in person these days. So I'm very happy that you're vaccinated. Yeah. It's also a little bit of a weight off of my shoulders. I don't have to be so scared about getting COVID.
Every time I cough on you, you can.
So, anyway. That's not what we're going to be talking about today. Today, we're going to be talking about something very important in Humboldt County and everywhere, farming. So today on the show, we are joined by the owner of Table Bluff Farm. Her name is Hannah Eisloffel. And Table Bluff, you live out there, Andrew.
I do live on Table Bluff. And I had never talked to Hannah before we reached out to her for this, but I did follow Table Bluff Farms on Instagram, and I feel like she has decided to very accessibly tell the story of Table Bluff Farm and show the highs and the lows of what it takes to just make food for people. And as much as she's a farmer, it was also her storytelling ability that I was like, oh well, if she's good in that medium. Maybe she would be good to talk about farming to Humboldt in this forum.
Yes.
So we're excited to talk to her today. See if we can get her in here.
Hi.
Hi.
We want to thank you, Hannah, for taking time away from herding pigs and harvesting vegetables to spend some time with us here on a yucky screen. So just to kick things off, and kind of set the tone of your life for people. When you're done yakking with us here, what are some of the things that you are going to tend to today?
Well, I was running a little late because I just came back from our Fortuna expanded farm spot, where we just moved all of our layer chickens. And so just got back from there collecting all the eggs and feeding them. And we also have some meat chickens in chicken tractors over there. And so we were making sure they have their water and food too. And so then I rushed back over here to the Lolita farm spot, the original spot, and to hop on with you guys. And so then after we're going to feed our pigs, and we're going to be planting carrots in our high tunnel greenhouse. And we're going to be planting strawberry starts, actually pruning them from our strawberry plants that we have, the runners, and planting them in new spots that we have, and planting our dahlia tubers also. And this is all going to be over the next couple of days, hopefully not all today.
Okay, I was going to say one day. Whoa.
But most of that will probably happen today because we'll work until dark.
And what time does your day start generally?
It starts, I'd say, around 6:30. Okay. Just kind of get up and take care of, you know, my own personal stuff. And then it's kind of all about the animals. So first thing is like taking care of all the little chickies that we have here. We have like, we have a bunch of new layer chicks, and then we have a bunch of meat chickens that are midway between childhood and adulthood. And so there's lots and lots of mouths to feed always. And so it's kind of like we do that, and then we go and harvest. And cause we do CSA, we do our community shared agriculture farm share program 3 days a week, right now, 3 days a week. And in the summer, fall, it's probably going to be more like 4 days a week for offering deliveries and stuff like that. So in between all that, we're also then going back, making sure the chicks are good. And it's kind of just an like always going back to different spots, but always then coming back to what is our main project for the day kind of thing.
You're constantly moving.
Yeah, constantly moving. Yes, I definitely get my steps.
Get your steps in.
Yeah. I would suspect everybody wants their steps.
Yeah. I would suspect it's a somewhat physical job. You kind of talked about it really a bit already. We were gonna kind of ask about, you know, what day to day operations are like for Table Bluff Farm. You know, you do chickens, you have eggs and meat chickens, and then and pigs as well. Like, how many of each of those animals do you keep?
Well, it's kind of, we don't really talk about exact numbers, but just because it's kind of like the secret sauce our farm. But
whoa, really? It's a trade secret. You don't say that?
Oh. Yeah, it's kind of like when you go to don't ever go to a cattle farm and ask them how many head of cattle they have, because that's basically asking them how much money do you make a year. Because you could figure out like how much is a head of cattle, you know. So that's basically how they'll take it. It's like just as a heads up, especially in Humboldt County.
Okay.
I did not know this before, so thank you.
No, but I can say that we have several hundred meat chickens that we're going to be processing in May. And then we have several hundred layer chickens that we, you know, they live out their whole lives here. And well, now in Fortuna, they live out their whole lives there. And we've got more chicks in the mail coming actually today. And so, we kind of layers, you know, they don't lay prolifically their whole life. And so you kind of have to keep up the stock and with, buying new chicks and stuff like that. But we just let our old birds live out their lives, because we can't really tell like when they exactly have stopped, and they've done such a good job for us. We don't really feel like killing them early something. So
that's kind. And you say you have this new Fortuna spot. Is this a really recent expansion?
Yeah, it's as the beginning of this year. We partnered with Keith Winiger of Winiger Farms in Fortuna, and he also rents to the Se Chow strawberry folks. And we actually have the field that's in between their two strawberry fields in Fortuna. And so it's a field that the Se Chows used to farm as well. And so it's really nice, lush grass, and chickens love it over there. And it's just 12 minutes from our farm. So it's not like a huge thing, but it's helping us expand our business so that we can keep offering these low cost food boxes to folks, and also offering delivery to them. We were planning on doing that before the pandemic anyway, offering delivery. That was kind of the trajectory of the farm. But once COVID struck, it became even more, you know, kind of inherent that I was going to have to do that to get food to people. And so it's worked out really well, and people want to keep it even though they're getting vaccinated. And it's just, you know, people like DoorDash, people like Instacart, things like that. And it's kind of become more of a trend. And so that's something that we are really passionate about, kind of meeting people where they're at, because sometimes the farmers markets times are not at a convenient time, especially for us. Our farmers market would be Fortuna, and it's like from 3 to 6 on Tuesdays. It just is a super inconvenient time for most people. And so being able to bring people veggies in the evenings, usually when they're getting home or just about to go to work or something like that, makes it easier for them.
So just to try and give people just, you know, better kind of lay of the land of, you know, what all Table Bluff Farms is. So you mentioned the Fortuna site. So is it just, you have the two sites now?
Yeah. So we have our, so I own and manage the original Table Bluff Farm and the expansion now. And it's 2 acres in Lolita.
Okay.
And we're a regenerative practicing farm. And so we're working on carbon sequestration, planting lots of perennials, coarse cover crops, but then also using our animals, integrating our animals into our farm, reuniting animals and plants instead of keeping them apart, kind of like how the industrial ag and food production has gone. And then we don't have to have a lot of inputs because we are making our own fertilizer, and we have chickens that work as kind of pesticide, you know, getting all the bugs and stuff. Right. And so, so that's an important thing that we are very, very strong about. But also, we believe that to be regenerative, you also have to make things affordable to the community. And so being able to offer a pay-as-you-go CSA instead of requiring any upfront payments. So instead it's $20 a week for a box of fresh veggies, has 6 to 7 items in it. And then you can also add on eggs and we offer delivery as well. So, so it's something that we are really passionate about. And then we also have like the add-on pork sometimes. We really just are raising pigs for piglets though. So we don't offer a lot of pork. That's not really our thing. Our thing is really having piglets available for then other farmers or homesteaders to bring home a piglet and raise up for themselves. So that's kind of where our niche is.
Okay.
And I find like that people don't always have a great grasp of how big an acre is. So, but like 2 acres, like that's a small, pretty small space for you to do all this stuff in. Yeah. Like, do you feel cramped in there? Is that why you needed to expand? And
well, yeah, actually. So we started doing eggs before we started growing vegetables. Like this is the beginning of everything was eggs. And we've just found that everyone loves our eggs a lot. And so we wanted to build that, but also wanted to grow our my flower business, which I kind of had to put on hold due to COVID last year, because that wasn't really something that people, well, number one, the Eureka Friday night market, the in-person one wasn't happening. And so that was really where people were just passing by and like, oh, wow, look at the flowers. So that wasn't happening. And then also just, it seemed like I instead invested in vegetable seeds to be able to offer more food, because I knew that food would probably be more of a thing, especially with people not wanting to go into grocery stores, and then with food shortages and things like that. We just felt like that's probably the best thing to do. And so, yeah, but it started to feel a little cramped. And so when this opportunity arose, we figured the best thing to do would be to just move all the chickens over to their own spot so that we can have our few pigs here and our vegetables and our flowers. And we want to eventually have this be kind of the spot that people come to, for like a farm stand kind of thing. So with picnic benches and BYOB and all that kind of thing, just have it be a fun spot for people to come and hang out. Cause we have all kinds of really fun animals, you know, pigs, and we have our few chickens over here. It's not like we're chickenless over here now, but, we have ducks and turkeys, and, we have this mandala flower garden. It's 5 concentric circles that we plant flowers, different flowers in each of those rows. And you can walk between them all. And it's, I mean, it's stunning in the summer right now. There's nothing going on, but in the summer it's stunning. So we want it to be kind of a place people can come to when they're waiting for their veggies, they can go take a walk in the mandala garden kind of thing. So,
Well, I want to, you know, we want to get to the effects of COVID on everything you're doing. But before that, we were hoping to get, you know, kind of the Hanna story, the arc of you. You know, we were looking at your website, and you note that you are a first generation farm. So this isn't like it's a family business that you're taking over. So maybe you could just kind of quickly take us through your story from cradle to Table Bluff. Where did you grow up?
Okay. So, I was born in Oregon, but I grew up in Southern California. And, when I got my, I went to UC Santa Cruz for college and graduated in 2008. And so it was a really bad time for getting a job and all those kinds of things. So I kind of just did different things, worked at an inn, worked at a veterinary office, and then lived in Shelter Cove where my mom lives for a while, and also did kind of odd jobs there. And I moved up to Arcata to work at Wildberries in the HR department, and I met my partner, Nick. And I actually hired him because he was looking for a job, and that's how we met. And he has a very strong farming agriculture background. And so he has a lot of the background knowledge. Okay. And I had the drive and the business sense and the wherewithal to be able to make a farm happen. And so we kind of started with just a few ducks and a few chickens. And I had essentially zero farming experience. I've had lots of animal experience. I was a environmental sciences with a biology concentration major. And so I had a lot of that and I had the passion, but I just never considered that I could do something like that, I guess. I just didn't have that thought of, well, I could own a farm and grow vegetables and raise animals myself. It was always a dream. Like, I've gone back in my journals and looked and it said, I want to have a farm. And like, it's funny because I made it happen.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of work, but you know, you can, and you don't need a lot of space. That's something I really want to make clear to folks, for folks who want to do something like this and raise their own food. You don't need a ton of space. You don't need these like acres and acres and acres to make it happen for yourself. And so that's something too. So when my partner and I kind of put our heads together and I said that I want a farm by the beach, we just started looking, and we got super lucky with this place in Lolita, and it's a really tiny house on this 2 acres that was just, it was an old horse pasture that was just covered in blackberry and compacted and crabgrass and just lots of, we had to take down all these ponderosa pine trees that were growing in the field. It was kind of a mess. And we've, over the past 3 years, 3.5, we've been rehabilitating it, and we are planting native perennials for hedgerow and windblock. So we've planted 80 redwood trees in the front block our wind. And we're going to let them get up to a certain height and then hedge them. We're planting about 100 other bushes and trees, rhododendrons, wild mock orange, western dogwood, sticky monkey flower, lavender, 6 different kinds of native berries. We have like all these plants and we're just starting to put them in the ground now. And this is funded by the NRCS, Natural Resource Conservation Service, and the CDFA. Okay. We got grants through them to get our high tunnel greenhouse because of the wind that we experience here. And then also these water conservation and soil health grants that's what our planting of our perennials is and installing drip irrigation is all about. But it also is just the baseline of establishing a regenerative farm as well, is having these perennials that you don't ever harvest and they just sequester carbon year after year. And the bigger they get, the more they sequester. And so that's really our goal.
And how key were these grants to your operations? Like, could you have done what you're doing without having secured those?
No.
Okay.
I would say that the going through the process of, and the NRCS folks are so great. I mean, anyone who's listening to this, who's thinking about applying for a grant, just go talk to them. They are super knowledgeable, and they're the local office is just over here on South Broadway, and they're just super knowledgeable, and they'll come out for free and look at your land and figure out like what kinds of grants you would be eligible for to apply for. And so we first got the high tunnel, and that was a $10,500 grant that we just couldn't pull that money out of nowhere. And so that really upped our game so that we could have greenhouse plants. So like tomatoes and cucumbers and eggplants and things like that, that require more heat.
Okay.
Yeah. When you talk about a high tunnel greenhouse, like I think probably some people might not know what sure. that is. Is it just what it sounds like? It's high yeah. and it's a tunnel.
It's like, so it's 30 feet wide by 96 feet long, and it's about 22 feet high at the peak. And so, and so it enables us to grow things that we need to trellis up high. So like tomatoes and mostly tomatoes. I mean, that's a huge thing for having that. We're also taking a big, dive this year. And, I just got a line of credit through American Ag Credit to purchase a second greenhouse, and it won't be quite this big, but it's really going to make it so that we can open up more spots and offer more delivery spots of this CSA. Something else that's kind of new for us this year is that I am now full-time on the farm. As of last November, I was working at Humboldt Area Foundation.
Okay.
Full-time for almost 4 years. It was like, I was like two weeks short of 4 years, and amidst COVID and everything, decided to take a huge plunge and quit and move full time here, because it was just getting too crazy to only be doing part time and on weekends and evenings and mornings and things like that. So that's a huge difference. And it was a big step to take, even during COVID, where I had a solid, you know, reliable health insurance and income and, you know, all those things. And so that was a huge step. And unfortunately, in the beginning of February, I had a major car crash. And I'm pretty much just lucky to be here right now. And it was my farm car, and it was my only vehicle. And, but it's what I made all my deliveries in. And so it was a really exciting thing to quit and move full time to the farm and follow my dream. And then that happened. It was kind of like did I make this right decision? And then I started a GoFundMe, and the community has rallied behind us, and people who have never even met us have supported us. And we're just overwhelmed by the generosity, and we're now going to be able to buy a vehicle that's, you know, replaces mine, but also enables us to make more deliveries, because it's going to be like more like a delivery vehicle and not like my car that I use for both.
So I feel like this is one of those trends that you read about that has kind of been accelerated by COVID, is this sort of maybe like disillusionment from young people in city life. And you get these stories from like written by astonished city folks, like, wow, people are foregoing the comforts and chaos of urban areas to go live in far-flung, beautiful rural places. That's crazy, right? And as you know, as you said, you recently made a decision like this, where you had a full-time gig at Humboldt Area Foundation, which, you know, that people have careers there, and there's lucrative careers, and you decided, no, I would rather go get my hands dirty and do this thing. Like, what all factors did you weigh internally that led you to make that decision?
Well, I felt like, although, you know, I was part of an organization that is making a big difference in this area, when I would go leave that job and go and do my deliveries of food and bring food to people who were saying that they have not had fresh vegetables in, I don't know, and they don't know how long, you know, that just touched me in a way that I was just feeling more and more like, I can do so much more if I am here. Like, I can actually make a bigger difference in the community that I want to serve if I am on my farm. And there was definitely a lot of like, is this going to make financial sense? Like, are we going to be able to come out of this and make the, we knew that, you know, by the time that this summer CSA starts, we're doubling the number that we've had last year of CSA members. And so we're like, if we can just make it to summer. But, you know, enough was happening here and just getting busier and busier. And I just felt like now's a good time. Let's just make a clean cut before the end of the year and take this little bit of time to get everything set up here for when it gets busy again. So
it's like,
So there's definitely the financial, but it was mainly a passion thing. It was that I didn't feel like I was living up to my full potential there. And I do feel like I'm doing that here.
It's risky, but more romantic potentially.
Yeah. And it's more, definitely more personally rewarding, like a hundredfold.
Yeah. And you're kind of saying this, like, one of the things that's maybe been sort of a silver lining of this pandemic has been that it's really shined a spotlight on some of these essential services like food and agriculture work that maybe some people had taken for granted a little bit previously, you know. And it sounds like, you know, talking about your people contributing to help you get your vehicle back and stuff, that you feel a lot like you have a lot of support from the community. Have you found that has grown since the pandemic?
Definitely. I feel, I mean, not only has the delivery service that we offer and the pay-as-you-go nature of our CSA, has that been a huge draw for folks and continues to be a huge draw for folks. Just, I'm very hands-on with everybody. And so I deliver the boxes to people's doorsteps and knock on the door and, you know, maybe have a little chat with folks. When they come to the farm to pick up, I go out and meet them and bring them their box, and they pet my pig and my dog and stuff. And so I've had folks tell us that they've never felt like they're so involved with their food, and who is growing their food ever before in their whole lives. Even, I mean, except for if they're growing their own food, of course, which is always encouraged. So it's, I think it's kind of a personal thing for them, and not just a, where am I getting my weekly groceries kind of thing. They don't get that experience at the grocery store. And even though our box comes with a, you know, it's a variety of things that will change each week. And you know, some vegetables might be things that people are like, what do I do with this? We try to offer recipes and things like that for people to work with, but also it's kind of a surprise. Like, people are actually liking the surprise aspect of, oh, it's strawberries this week, you know, kind of thing. So,
So
I feel like your sector of the Humboldt workforce is maybe one that we don't talk to as often at Loco, maybe because y'all are so busy all the time. But
I think that's a huge part of it.
Yeah.
I do.
Okay. Yeah. But do you find are there a lot of other people that are kind of in your realm of, like, you know, first time farmers? Like, I wanted to get away from the rat race and do this, take the risk on this thing. Like, do you find other people that are pursuing a similar passion as yours?
You know, I've actually met, I think I've, or met, quote unquote, met more people on Instagram doing that whole, like, quitting, leaving the big city and going and finding their passion here. Here in Humboldt, I feel like it's either a kind of a generational thing that folks are sticking into, or they did grow up in the farming world and left it for a while, but then they realize that that is their calling. And so going back to it, kind of like that. I haven't met I can't think of anybody right now that, that had like a full-time position somewhere else and then like left and made the jump to go onto the farm. I'm sure there are out there and I just don't know. But the folks that I am familiar with, other farms around here, they were farmers and have been farmers for years, kind of thing. So I'm not quite sure, but I've definitely seen a lot of artists in Humboldt County that I follow doing that, making the leap to just say, they're either making more money this way because they can sell online and people are shopping more online. Or it's this moment from the universe that is a once in a lifetime thing, kind of that, you know, this pandemic, and hopefully it's once in a lifetime, you know, and even longer. But it's just one of those, like, changing moments where you can decide to just keep going on, or that there's enough been disrupted in your life that you just think, well, what's a little more?
Yeah.
So, it was a crazy year, and yet I also feel incredibly blessed that I was able to, that I had something else, that I had the choice to be able to leave a full steady time job, because a lot of people don't have that privilege to do. And so, I'm grateful every day that I have this to go to, and that I wish, you know, for more people to be able to find their joy and go for their passion, whatever it is, you know, because life is so, so very short, and pandemics can show you how life, I think that is a thing too, is just like, it shows you how precious and short life is. And if you're not happy now and you take a look at yourself and you see that, then it's just one of those, okay, let's just do something about that. So,
And sorry, what year did you start? What year did Table Bluff Farm start?
Established in 2017, in July of 2017.
Okay, so you've been doing this for 4 years, and like in that time, have you found yourself in conversation with people where you then get to be, you know, kind of encouraging, like, hey, you know, no, you should do this. Like, it's scary at first, but I, you know, do you mentor?
Would-be farmers. Like there's been some local folks that have asked questions and that I've been happy to point them to resources, especially resources like getting grants and stuff like that. The best feed store to go to, you know, things like that. And then a lot of, again, like a lot of online folks too, just connecting through new farmers and just kind of, especially about marketing. So like online social media stuff, like how do you, cause you can grow the best food in the world, but if you can't show that, and if you can't make it, show that to the world, then, you're not going to necessarily sell it over someone else. And so kind of questions about how to make yourself appealing on social media and things. And, really the best advice I can give is just people being themselves, cause they are going to get, people are going to get followers that then someone, you know, you post and they're going to get all in a huff and they're going to unfollow you.
The true
lovers of your stuff will stay.
that was something I was going to ask you about, because I feel like something that unique that you bring to this lifestyle you've chosen is that you seem to very consciously have decided to tell the story of your farm on social media. Like, you've taken on this role as a, you know, you're a storyteller. Telling the story is part of the job, it seems like. Like, I was on the Table Bluff Farm Instagram in advance of this chat, and I was looking, I was like, what is this that I'm looking at? Oh, that is just an up close in your face video of an egg coming out of a chicken.
It
was like, nice. Yeah, okay. I had never seen that before. And
people didn't like that. They're like, I'm liking knowing more about where my food comes from, but that's too much information. Yeah.
Should I flag this? Is this graphic content?
Some separation.
No, yeah. I consider, I'm like, do I put this as graph? It's an egg.
Yeah, just an egg.
Yeah. I'm very much wanting to not only to be able to look back for myself and go like, oh my gosh, look at this year. And on, you know, I do the day count, day this of this, because it goes, that's actually based on what you write on your egg cartons. It's the Julian calendar, which is days 1 through 365 or 366 in the leap years. And so that's how you count which day your eggs were packed on. You actually write the Julian calendar date. And so that's kind of where I got from, oh, let's tell this like daily story, like based on the Julian calendar. And so this is the third year I think I've been doing that. And it's about being able to look back and go, oh, look at that year, what I was doing on this day and what was growing then, and that kind of comparison, but also the day to day, this is what it's like, you know, and it's not always like happy pigs and happy chickens. Sometimes it's dead pigs and dead chickens, you know, like sometimes it is. And that's reality. And I don't want to ever give folks the impression that it's all fun and games to do this, because not only well, not only will they be disappointed, but they will then be affecting lives of other beings if they're choosing to take those on to their farm, you know? And so I want everyone to be in the best position possible. And so knowing that there are these hard things, and like I shared about how guinea fowl are super noisy, and you know, two or three people commented, oh my God, thank you so much for sharing that, because I really wanted to get guinea fowl, and I live next to two neighbors and I don't think they'd like it.
Well, so, you mentioned the inevitable internet comment haters. Has that ever made you second guess your decision to be as transparent as you are? Because I, especially on a farm, it feels like that would be something where people would just want to be showing off their expertise, and like, a pig died. Well, then you must have not been doing that pig right. You know?
Totally. Yeah, no, there's a fine line. And I think having it being based in like, lessons learned and knowledge gained to move forward is super important. And, but there's also that, I mean, I just recently was trolled and told that I deserve to crash my car because I raise and eat my own animals. One of those kinds of folks. And so, so then I went on and I posted a photo of me holding a pig heart and it was like a vegan troll back.
Yeah.
And
damn.
And my friend, she wrote me, she's like, that was the best trolling of the vegan trolls ever. And I don't have any, like, just to be clear, I don't have anything against vegans. It's more of the holier than thou thing that
You answered fire with fire.
Yes. And I got a lot of support for that. And I feel like, okay, I'm going to dig into where I have my support. And I got a really good piece of advice recently when this trolling was happening that said, don't take criticism from people who you wouldn't ask advice from. And I'm like, oh my God, that really narrows down the list of people I have to pay attention to, criticism.
And very freeing, right? Yeah.
It's very freeing. And so I've just been, I've just stopped commenting on the things. If it's a negative thing, I just delete it because there's just no need for that. And it's just, there's not going to actually be any illuminating dialogue that goes on in the comments of a social media thing. And so,
the Los Cos Outpost is aware
the
of
Outpost. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, my no, God. Compost, more than anybody
yes.
else. Yeah. So it's just like, not to fuel the fire and also not to stop sharing, because the one person's, naysaying doesn't really outweigh all the benefits that come of this sharing and being genuine. And that's what I get from a lot of people responding, just saying, wow, I'm just so happy that you're so real and share everything that happens, you know, and that it really gives me a better view of what farming is, and better than the farms that just post the happy, like, chicks walking through the grass kind of thing, which are great. I mean, everyone needs happy chicks walking through the grass, but
absolutely,
we need to show it all. Yeah.
Yeah. Appreciate that. Something else that you were saying earlier about your farm that seems, you know, unique to me. And obviously I think I've made it pretty obvious that I don't know much about farming. So already, I think we made that clear in the first like 30 seconds of this podcast. Because, you know, being out and in Lolita, of course there are, you know, there's farms out there, but I think of it more as like dairy and less of the produce growing, because like you said, you are on the coast. Like you told your partner, I want to have a farm next to the beach. And that's not something you usually think of. Like that's most of the our produce growers are more inland here in the warmer climates. So
totally,
you know, I mean, first, like, what made you decide that you were gonna undertake that, and then also like you've talked about some of the things that you're adding now to be able to grow more of these warmer climate crops, but you know what have you been growing there before, and what are these extra challenges that kind of come with the climate that you're in?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I wanted to live by the beach because I grew up in Southern California, going to the beach. The beach is just part of my, I love tide pooling. I love, you know, I'm the person that's like down under the rock, you know,
I love tide pooling too.
I'm a tide pool nerd.
My mom studied marine biology. So I grew up in tide pooling.
I studied marine biology and then only switched at the very end. So yeah, I'm a pool nerd on that. So yes,
oh, you
I
too.
Love that. So that's kind of a given. Was I just had to be by the beach to continue that. And it's also, I hate hot weather. I hate hot weather. And so it's like also, this is my kind of weather. Sometimes it gets a little cold, and Lolita on top of the hill here, it gets really windy, which is another reason why we planted those windbreak trees. But that was really the main driver, was just, I don't know if I could live away from the ocean. But challenges, like I just said, wind, it'll be, you know, blowing like crazy up here. And then you go down the hill or go into Eureka and there's like just a tiny little breeze or something. And it's that actually though enabled us to get our grants though, because you know, the NRCS lady came up here and was like, wow, the wind is blowing like crazy. That probably really affects your crops. And it does. And the high tunnel, not only could we not have grown this big because of the space that we have in there to grow, but just the quality of the produce that comes out, it's unmatched. So, so that's a challenge. Other challenges are the dampness, the wetness in the air. Sometimes it makes it so that you don't have a watering schedule that's just, every day for 20 minutes at noon, that's when you water. It's actually, you need to go out and check and see, like, cause it could be still damp on a day like today. Like, we're not going to need to water any of the seed starts that we watered yesterday. So that's a challenge. It just doesn't make it as like, as regulated and as these are the rules of the farm. Like, this is what you do to take care of things. But I would say also that there's one of the big benefits of being by the ocean is that we can grow the hot crops in the high tunnel and in the other greenhouse, and we can grow year round cold crops outside. And so that is a huge, like, you know, other farms that are just even a little bit inland will not be able to grow lettuce past, you know, June. Because it just bolts like crazy. And so they would have to either have a greenhouse that then they kept cold, which would be insanely expensive, or they just don't grow that stuff during that time.
Wait, what does that mean? It would bolt? Is that what you said?
Yeah. So lettuce, when it gets, there's a couple things. When it's too hot, it just basically thinks that it's supposed to go to flower. And so it like, you'll see the lettuce head, it just kind of grows like a cone, and you start to, and you'll taste it and it's super bitter. And it's basically trying to flower. It's like thinking, oh, you don't want me as vegetable anymore. It's way too hot. Okay. Like, it's time to flower. And so, like there's certain crops that we grow in the high tunnel right now, like broccoli, that in another month, like, we won't replant broccoli into the high tunnel because broccoli is a cold season crop that gets the extra boost in the winter by being in the high tunnel, not getting rained on and the wind all the time, but it will be too hot in there soon. So there's kind of like a, there's more opportunities because of the coast and having like, oh, we can plant lettuce, but it has to be outside, you know? So you have to do a lot of planning, because then when one row is done and you've harvested everything from that row, what's going in there next and how many days will that take to come, you know, to be harvestable, kind of thing. So I've been learning a ton just these past couple of years from my partner, who he's started a community garden in Boulder and a homeless garden in project in Portland. So he's done this stuff more. And so I'm kind of learning from him how to make this best work and then putting it into a map, kind of thing.
So you and Steph got to bond over tide pools. So I want to push Steph aside for a moment so that we can nerd out over Table Bluff. I live out on Table Bluff.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. And awesome. And I'm wondering, like, How did you discover that place? Because it's always strikes me as weird. Like Table Bluff is very close to Eureka, you know, relatively to other places in Humboldt. But, you know, it's like 15 minutes, you can be in Old Town. Yet I feel like nobody knows about Table Bluff.
I know.
No one in Humboldt don't. Yeah, they don't go there.
I actually have to say that I had never even been to the town of Lolita, like not even to the cheese factory before we discovered this house here. And it was literally that we lived in Bayside and tried to buy the house that we were at that was on. It was about an acre that we were on, and we were already had animals there. So we're like, let's just try to buy it. But there were a lot of problems. So that didn't happen. And we were on Zillow and this house came up for under 300,000 on this 2 acres. And I mean, it was, you know, we came and we're like, well, it's a mess, but it's a place and it has a house.
It's land.
So, yeah. And it's land and it's, and we looked across the street at how nice their stuff was and their nice pasture and everything and the cows. Yeah. And we're like, it can look like that. It's like, right. You know, it's right there.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it was luck. I mean, it was sheer luck because we found it on the day that it had gotten listed and there were already offers on the same day that we made the offer. And it was just, it was luck.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, I love it out here. I mean, despite the wind and everything, like we have, you know, the Crab Park right down the road. We have the bluff itself with all the kite flyer people out there.
Hang gliding. The best hang gliding in Humboldt.
Like, wind like, has its benefits. Like that.
Oh yeah. Don't call them kite flyers, pipes. Hannah.
And then the sand dunes there and the jetty where you can like fish off the jetty. I mean, it's an amazing spot.
I feel like the photographers of Humboldt are aware of Lighthouse Ranch County Park.
Oh yeah.
Other than them, because I see a lot of senior portraits. I'm like, that's by my house. But most people don't know that you can even go down there.
It's so great. I love this spot. It's its own little secret kind of gem, I feel like. And maybe it won't be so secret anymore once we have our farm stand open, but we're only about a half a mile down. When you turn on to Table Bluff Road, we're only about a half a mile down on Clough Road.
Clough Road, right?
Yeah. Clough. And so it'll still be pretty secret out there.
And so I think you said before, but just to be sure, you're still shooting for opening the farm stand and having more people out there on this summer. Is that?
Yeah. This summer. Mm-hmm. We're thinking right now that it's going to be Saturdays, and kind of Saturdays all day. I mean, maybe like, you know, from 10 to 3 kind of thing. So I guess it's not all day, but it's a big chunk of the day.
Yeah.
And just having folks being able to come, and if they just want to look at the flowers, they can look at the flowers, or if they want to, you know, see what we have, strawberries, tomatoes, all those extra things that we have aside from our CSA. That's great too. If they just want to come and hang out and sit in the sun, I would love that too. So that's definitely a goal, is to be a place that nourishes people from the inside out kind of thing.
Nice. Well, I think that's about all we had to talk about. Unless, is there anything else that you would like to, you know, put out to the people of Humboldt? Any messages, any land ethos philosophy you want to drop on?
Yeah, I was going to say, what would you say to somebody, you know, who's trying to start out?
Oh, man. So
piece of advice.
I would say that people tend to immediately go to the rototiller. So I just down the street, there was a place here that just rototilled their front yard, and to probably put in a little vegetable garden or something. And I would encourage people to look into silage tarps and to look into no-till, which I'll explain.
Okay.
So regenerative
agriculture. We just set you off on something. Here we go.
So regenerative agriculture is based on sequestering more carbon than you're releasing. And so when you, not only when you use a tractor or a rototiller, are you using the fossil fuels that that machine needs to just even run, but by disturbing the soil, you are actually releasing carbon from the soil. So just the process of tilling the soil disturbs it enough that there is then carbon that was sequestered by plant roots and things like that, is now being released. And so, minimal disturbance to the soil is basically the best practice, for the environment and for your plants, for your yard. I mean, for everything. It's really, it takes a little longer. So I would just encourage people to get started a little quicker, because it's not like that quick, of course, you know, it's not gas powered. And so it's not that quick, like, solution, but just go and buy a big black tarp. And I mean, it can be, you don't even, it could be like plastic garbage bags just laid out on an area that you want to have planted, and leave it there for a couple months, and you pull it up and you will not have anything there, and you will be able to just, and it'll be really good soil, because the, basically what the silage tarp does is captures the heat. And so weeds will come up under it, and then it'll be too hot, so they'll die off. And then another set of different kinds of weeds that are more resistant, you know, to heat or whatever, they'll come up and they'll be killed off. So eventually you'll just get just bare soil that has not been touched at all, like by, you know, disturbing it at all. The layers are perfectly intact, and you've just added all this organic matter in those weed plants into the soil, and you can then just plant right into it. That is the biggest piece of advice I would give, actually, because it's something so small, but collectively, if we all didn't use rototillers and instead use this practice, I think that folks would not only learn what they can do to not, you know, to be less dependent on fossil fuels, and the effects that that kind of machinery has on the land, but also just the quality of their vegetables are just going to be so much greater, because they're not disturbing what the vegetables grow in. That's what I would say.
Okay. Yeah. One more thing. If people do run into you, or they come out and get signed up, do you prefer that they call you Farmer Hanna?
Yes, please.
Yeah. Okay.
Please call me Farmer Hanna. And just like I love being called Auntie Hanna by my partner's nieces and nephews, Farmer Hanna is, yes, my preferred name.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Farmer Hanna. It sounds like great deal of passion for what you do. And we appreciate you sharing all of this insight with us. And is there just anything else that you want to say?
Just thank you so much for your interest in farming. And there are a lot of farmers out there that are super excited about what they're doing. And I encourage you to do a whole series.
Excellent. Okay, thank you. Yeah. Well, we might. And before we get into the summer, when none of you will have time for
us,
but if people want to sign up, if people want to do the CSA or want to find out more information about you, they can visit tableblufffarm.com.
Yep.
Right.
And we're on Instagram if you want to see all the, you know, day-to-day things that we're doing and fun pig videos, things like that.
Chicken
and
eggs. If you want to see a chicken come
sometimes egg. Not so fun.
Chicken laying eggs. You can even see that. And that's it. That's little... also Table Bluff Farm, and easy to find on Facebook too.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys. Thanks so much.
Okay, well, thanks so much to Farmer Hanna for joining us. Definitely learned a lot today.
Yeah. So if you are an aspiring farmer and you want someone who can to show you the ropes, Farmer Hanna, reach out on Instagram and she'll probably respond.
Yes. And also, if you are interested in becoming a CSA member and getting their food, check out tableblufffarm.com.
It's, I am going to keep wearing my mask, Steph, even though I'm vaccinated. And so I feel the responsibility to remind you to keep wearing your mask around me. Even though I'm a being of pure light now, I want you to be cautious.
Oh, okay. Thank you. And to everybody else.
You're welcome.
And everybody else out there, stay safe as well. Slow jam for that booty. Yeah.
jam for that booty.